Session number 14219, Colonel Kenneth Meade, Reel 1.
Where were you born, please?
I was born in Southend-on-Sea in Essex in 1923.
What did your father do for a living?
My father was a professional soldier, and when he retired from the army, he was in the customs and excise.
Which section of the army was he in?
He was in the Royal Engineers in the field squadron.
Did you go to school in Southend?
Only initially on the basic. We moved to Southampton with my father's job when I was about seven.
How old were you when you finished your schooling?
I was 16 when I finished my schooling.
So that was just before the war started?
Yes, yeah, so I finished the school in the August and joined the Army's Boy Service in the September.
Why did you do that?
Well, war had broken out. I think everyone felt rather patriotic, and it was at this stage, I think, the case of the employment also point of view.
What was your reaction when you heard the news that we were at war with Germany?
I don't know as I had any great reaction. The build-up had been coming. I think it was obvious that war was coming, and I think we accepted. I don't think I had any great reaction at the time.
You weren't dismayed about it?
Not really. I think I was too young to be dismayed at that stage.
Had your father been in the First World War?
My father had been in the First World War and in the Boer War also.
So he hadn't given you any horrific stories of war service?
No, I think people of my father's generation very rarely spoke about their wartime experiences, certainly the life in the trenches or anything like this. And speaking to other people these days, they say that their parents, their relatives never spoke fully about their experiences in World War One.
What's happened after your joining up?
Well, I joined the army, as I said, as a boy soldier in the Royal Engineers and was training as an ordnance surveyor on the map making department.
How did you like that kind of work?
Initially, it was a superb job, especially as a topo surveyor. It was a case of operating outdoors with a plane table, plenty of fresh air, and left very, very much on one's own.
And then after that?
After that, as the war developed and there was the need for maps overseas, I was retrained as a stereo surveyor, which did need working indoors under arc lights under very, very difficult conditions that I felt at that time, being fairly young.
Were you in any of the early bombing of Britain by the German Air Force?
Yes, I was in actual fact buried in Southampton. I was on duty in the Ordnance Survey building in London Road during the big bombing raids on Southampton. And at one stage I was buried under a building.
Can you describe what happened?
Yes, we'd been on duty for several hours and I was wet through, and I was told to go and get a change of clothing and get some protective clothing on. And this went into a little basement room. And when I was down there changing, a delayed bomb exploded, and half of the building collapsed on me.
Why were you so wet?
By using the hoses, the fire hoses, we were in a normal uniform at the period, and after a period of time, we're using the hoses, we got wet, and clothing was dirty, and I needed a complete change of clothing.
This was in London Road, Southampton?
London Road, Southampton, yes, the head office of the Ordnance Survey.
About when would it have been?
That was late 41.
What injuries did you have?
Not a lot of injuries, some damage to my foot and leg, but a relative minor scale.
Did you have any psychological consequences afterwards?
No, I don't think so. The rest of the team realised I was down there and came and dug me out within a few minutes.
Would this be late 41 or late 40?
Late 40, I'm sorry.
Because in February 41 you went to Clitheroe.
Yes, I'm sorry, yes, I've lost a year.
Do you remember any of the other buildings or streets in Southampton that were badly hit?
Well, yes, the whole High Street from the Ordnance Office in London Road, which was the top end of the town, right the way down through to the docks, was virtually destroyed and was burning.
What was public morale like in Southampton under the Blitz?
To me, as a young boy still, it seemed a very, very, very strong. There was no attempt at panic or anything like that. Families were moving to the outskirts, but generally they seemed to accept what was going on.
Was there any hatred of the German air crews who were carrying out the bombing?
Oh yes, I don't think people were very very pleased at all with the Germans at this stage of the game. Mainly they seemed to be able to come and bomb without any restrictions.
Do you think the populace would have harmed any German pilot they got hold of?
I don't know. I think if they had come down, I think they would have been just captured and taken away. I think while they were remote and up there in the air dropping bombs, I think there was a certain amount of hatred, but I think if they had come face to face, in normal circumstances, I think it would have been quite okay.
When you were buried, what could you smell?
Well, the building was burning, so I could smell it was burning, and there was brick dust, and it was mainly the burning and the smell of a building collapsed with the dust floating around.
When you moved to Clitheroe, were you in any bombing up there?
No. There was no bombing and no enemy action at all at that period.
How did you come to be in the glider pilot regiment?
At this stage, I'd moved on to a Royal Engineer map making unit in North Wales, and the training I'd received as a stereo plotter, stereo map maker, was utilised. And it was a case of virtually 6 or 7 days a week working indoors under arc lights using stereo pairs. And my eyes started to play up. And I was most unhappy in this role then. And volunteers were being asked for in the various special services, I suppose you can call them that, of the Commandos, Parachute Regiment and Glider Pilot Regiment. With two or three other friends, I volunteered for the glider pilot regiment.
So you preferred the possibility of the danger of active service to the discomfort of the ordnance survey job?
I think so, at that stage in the game. Meanwhile, we're still very young.
And this appears to be about 43.
Yes, in about September 43, August, September 43.
Can you tell me about the training that you had?
The initial flying training, as you must remember, there was quite a lot of military training. All the volunteers were given a certain amount of military training to bring them all to the same standard from the military point of view. From the flying point of view, we started initially on the Tiger Moth, which was the twin engine trainer, basic trainer that all the services used. And this was at 21 EFTS, which was just outside High Wycombe, a place called Booker. I think it's still now a civilian airfield. From there, I went to Shobden, which is near Hereford, and for training on the light glider, the training glider, which was the Hotspur. From there, on to the heavy glider conversion unit, HGCU, which at that stage was at Brydsnorton, for conversion onto the operational glider, which was the Horta.
What was it like being a glider pilot in those days?
It was a very good life, I think. We were all enthusiastic in what we were doing. We had a reasonably good standard of life, and we were all of a similar sort of mind, all the volunteers. And it was very, very hard work, both from the military point of view, with plenty of run marches, physical training exercises. And, of course, from the flying point of view, it was necessary to do quite an amount of studying and night work in order to achieve the standard and pass the examinations.
How did the Hotspur and Horsa gliders handle?
They were both beautiful aircraft to handle. The Hotspur, in spite of the fact it was a lot larger than the sailplane you see floating around now, you could perform a certain amount of manoeuvres, wing overs, and actual fact, if you had a good thermal, you could soar in it. The Horsa, on tow, was very, very hard work, but once you released, irrespective of your load, you could manoeuvre it and fly it around and quite enjoy yourself with it.
When you say hard, do you mean hard muscular work?
Yes, physically it was very, very heavy work, and somewhere about 20, 25 minutes was virtually enough for you to had to hand over to the other pilot then.
Which did you prefer, the Hotspur or the Horsa, to fly?
I think the Horsa, because it was bigger, it was better laid out aircraft. In actual fact, you could get up and walk around, walk back into the cabin, whereas with the Hotspur you're tied in the front. It was very difficult to judge, because I had far more experience on the Horsa in the end than the Hotspur. Very, very limited amount of flying was actually done on the Hotspur, so about 20 or 30 hours total.
What kind of people were acting as tow pilot?
I think in the majority of cases they were RAF fighter pilots on a rest period. As far as I know, certainly they were quite exceptional people with a lot of dash, And I think the majority were, as I say, fighter pilots from the squadrons, various squadrons, doing a rest period of towing us around.
How did the glider pilots get on with them?
Very well indeed, very, very well indeed. Yes, all the way through, I think this is one of the great things about the glider pilot regiment in the RAF, was certainly in the squadrons, and you were paired up with a towing aircraft, a towing crew, that you went out together, you played together, and you stuck together so that you knew who was towing you and they knew who was behind them. And I think this paid off by a lot of the support given, dropping of supplies in the later operations.
But did you ever complain about each other because of your different jobs?
No, not at all, not at all. I think we both appreciated what we were doing, what we were trying to do.
Any incidents that happened to you on the training that stick out?
No, I had a very, very quiet training period right the way through until I joined the squadron.
Were there any accidents in the training?
No, no, not at all.
Which squadron did you first join?
The squadron I joined was F Squadron, which was at a place called Broadwell, which is just south of Burford, in between Lechlade and Burford, up in the, was the Cotswolds. It's quite interesting. I think the airfield was only open for about 10 months, certainly under a year, from beginning to end. It opened at the beginning of 44, and I think it was closed by about the end of 44. So that's quite an interesting fact about a lot of the airfields then.
Was there much difference between the different squadrons in character?
The only squadron that was completely different was C Squadron, which flew the Hamilcar, which was the big heavy tank carrying glider, and they were based at Tarrant Rushton in Dorset, near Blandford. But the rest were basically the same sort of makeup and did the same similar sort of job.
How would you have liked to have been in C Squadron instead of the one you were in?
No, I was quite happy, and I don't think I'd really fancied flying Hamilcars. Operationally, I don't think so.
Any special reason?
Well, I think they did a lot of difficult jobs. Certainly, I know of cases where they went into one of the operations carrying petrol, and to carry about 7 ton of petrol really doesn't strike me as being a good idea. They were also slightly different construction. They had a standard conventional undercarriage, and certainly at Arnhem, they with the enormous weight loaded of what's 15 ton, with a conventional undercarriage going into onto softish soil ground, there were two or three turned over upside down, completely over dug in. And on D-Day, the Hamilcars went in during the night operation, during next Operation Tonga, and I think again, it was very, very dangerous sort of manoeuvre, really, far more than the hawser.
Can you tell me what work you did once you joined F Squadron in January 44?
Well, it's purely a case of developing our military knowledge. We were trained on various pieces of equipment, the guns and tanks and so on. Awful lot of run marches and physical exercising type of work. Flying, we did flying as much as possible. And as we got nearer to D-Day, June the 6th, this started to build up into the mass types of landings which we would have to put into use on D-Day.
Did you have a special briefing for D-Day that you remember?
Oh yes, yes. All pilots had a full, very, very comprehensive briefing with what a couple of days before, with sand tables, models, films taken of the run into the landing zones by the PR aircraft, which were then. So we actually saw where we would fly. We saw the various landmarks and features on the ground, and the actual type of actual field we would land in.
How confident did you feel after the briefing about what you had to do?
Very, very confident. Very, very confident indeed. It was. It seemed all eventualities had been covered, and everyone seemed to know exactly what they were doing and when and why and how.
Can you take me through your memories of the flight into Normandy and what you did, please, in detail?
Our job was to take troops of the Air Landing Brigade, 6th Airborne Air Landing Brigade. They were actual fact soldiers of the Royal Ulster Rifles. And we were due to land in the later afternoon, early evening on D-Day itself. The landing was to be done on the largest of the landing sites, landing site N, which was in between Ranville and the coast, just north of Ranville. We assembled on the runway at early afternoon and checked our load, briefed them, went through the various emergency drills in the event of ditching coming down in the channel, procedures after landing, who was getting out, which doors and so on, and took off just about tea time. One of the difficulties with the glider-borne operation was to ensure that they managed to get together into their required group, didn't want large gaps. So it was somewhere like 30 gliders taking off from Broadwell. They orbited around the airfield, the first ones off, orbited around till the remainders coming off. We were getting airborne about every, 30 seconds, one glider every 30 seconds, so it took about 15, 20 minutes to get the whole squadron airborne, and they orbited around the airfield, set off, and then joined up with the other squadrons going off from other airfields, which were up to, 20, 30 miles away, until you finished up with a long stream of tugs and gliders. And on this particular operation, in fact it was called Operation Mallard, the evening landing, there were somewhere in the region of 250 gliders and obviously 250 tugs, about 500 aircraft, in this very, very large stream. We coasted out from England in the Chichester area. And we had a fighter escort. I don't know, I think the figure was somewhere about 18 or 20 squadrons of close support aircraft, mainly Spitfires. So the sky was rather crowded with the 500 tugs and gliders and 20-odd squadrons of Spitfires. Fairly close in, you could certainly see them around you. It was about 40 minutes, 40, 45 minutes, over the channel. And again, on the way, there were rescue boats. You could see them down underneath us, ready to pick us up if we ditched. And we coasted in virtually on Wistram, which is at the mouth of the River Orne and the canal, which ran up past Pegasus Bridge to Caen. The weather was quite nice at that time of the evening. There was certainly sun out, and we were at 1,500 foot. And we flew straight down the line of the river and the canal. And at 1,500 foot, as I say, we released and did a turn to port, turn to the left, over Ranville, and landed back on a northerly heading. We were towards the end of the stream, so it was very, very crowded. Not all the 250 gliders went into the one landing site. About 80 had peeled off and did a right-hand turn instead of our left-hand turn onto landing site W, which was on the west of the river and the canal. So we landed, and as I say, it was very crowded, and we finished up on the extreme left of the landing site, very close to the road that ran from Ranville up towards Cabourg and Merville, which were on the coast. Royal Ulster Rifles debussed and duly charged off into action. There was a certain amount of action going on. There was fire. The Germans were fairly close round, and there was a certain amount of enemy activity going on at that time. We were very, very close to some of the Royal Marine Commandos, Lord Lovett's. They weren't Royal Marine Commandos, were they? I think they were Army Commandos. I'm sorry about that. Who had landed at Wistram, passed over Pegasus Bridge, and come down on the east side of the river. And so there were about 10 or 15 glider pilots and various gliders joined up with the commandos. And we spent the night with the commandos, mainly defending the landing site. Due to the shortage of glider pilots, and there was the 1st Airborne Division waiting in the wings for their operation, it was necessary for the glider pilots to get back and in case there was a follow-up with the 1st Airborne Landing Brigade. So we had priority tickets to be taken out of Normandy. So somewhere about mid-day on the 7th of June, we withdrew across the Pegasus Bridge back down the other side of the canal to the Wistram area, the British Beach area, and we were taken off and brought back by landing craft to New Haven.
When you say tickets, do you mean there was an actual piece of paper giving you permission?
Yes, we actually had pieces of paper giving us priority to get out, to come back. As I say, there were, 250, I suppose there were about 700